Powerball tickets in hopes of winning the record jackpot of $588 million. One couple has claimed their portion of that money, and while another winning ticket was apparently sold in Arizona, no one has come forward to claim their winnings, at least not yet. They might be the real winners, because sudden wealth is often more of a problem than a dream come true. State governments are increasingly reliant on gambling for revenue, including lotteries, which are heavily promoted. And while you might feel lucky, the odds are stacked against you. Well, today in Radio Times, we look at the proliferation of state-run lotteries, who plays and why, who the real winners and losers are, how winners get in trouble, and why sudden wealth is so stressful. We begin our conversation with Brad Humphreys. He's a professor of economics and chair in the economics of gambling at the University of Alberta, also editor of Contemporary Economic Policy. And Brad Humphreys, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty. It's wonderful to be with you this morning.
Now, you're joining us from Canada. Does that country also have government-run lotteries?
Oh, of course. It's an international phenomenon. It's not just the U.S. and Canada, actually. So, yeah, government-sponsored lotteries are quite popular in Canada.
And is that because no government wants to raise anyone's taxes and they have to find revenue from somewhere?
That's part of it. But, you know, lotteries have a long history of in public finance as a way of raising government funds. For example, Harvard University in the colonial era was founded in part by money raised through a lottery. So it's not new, and it's sort of pervasive around the world.
Is it a problem, you think, from your perspective?
No, I don't think so. I think it's a good way to voluntarily raise government funds, right? So unlike sales taxes or income taxes, it's a voluntary tax on individuals, and I think it provides consumption benefits. I mean, there's a famous book in economics that was called Selling a Dream, which details the idea that these large jackpot lotteries really are a source of consumption benefits for individuals, because it allows you to dream about a life-changing financial event.
It's a dream, but it's a fantasy.
Well, sure it is. I mean, right. So the odds of winning the Powerball, that was the big drawing last week, were 1 in 175 million, and that's almost inconceivable to most people to understand, you know, what that probability really means, because it's so unlikely that it's outside of the realm of typical human experience.
Let me ask you, I have nothing against gambling per se, although I have to say I am troubled in part by gambling that is sponsored by governments, because I feel like if it's a private enterprise and you go to a casino and you play the slot machine, that's sort of on you, and whether you win or lose, that's between you, I guess, and this private casino company. But when the government is trying to tell you that you are special and it's your lucky day, it really isn't. I mean, you're not, as you said, it's 1 in 175 million chance that you're going to get this winning Powerball ticket. I'm a little more troubled by that, I have to be honest.
Yeah, sure, and certainly a lot of people are troubled by the fact that lottery is advertised so heavily, for example. And it certainly is the case that, you know, you can't get away from billboard advertising, television advertising, radio advertising for lotteries. And, to add insult to injury, here in the United States, it's really much more heavily taxed than in other countries. Huh. In that, you know, once you cash that winning Powerball ticket, you're taxed again, right? And, for example, in Canada, lottery winnings are not taxable in terms of the income tax.
Really?
They're exempt, yeah. Yeah, which is sort of reasonable, because if you think about, here's the way that public lotteries are operated. There's a takeout rate. So for every $2 Powerball ticket somebody buys, 45% of that, you know, 90 cents, goes immediately to the government and is not paid out as prizes. And then they keep 55% that goes into the prize pool. So you're already paying this huge implicit 45% tax rate on the purchase of a ticket. And then to go ahead and tax the winnings again like we do in the U.S., it's just sort of crazy.
That's interesting. I was also reading that when you look at those people who, generally speaking, obviously with some exceptions, when you look at who plays lottery, it tends to be lower-income people. Does that square with your research or your findings?
Certainly, and that's a phenomenon that we see pretty much around the world, not just in the U.S., that if you look at the likelihood that somebody is going to buy a lottery ticket, it goes down as you move up the income distribution. So relatively low-income people are much more likely to play the lottery, and high-income people are much less likely to play the lottery. And in that sense, a lot of economists say it's really a regressive tax to the extent that the government is earning money off of it, because, I mean, it's the people who are least able to afford that who are really playing more, I should say.
So do you see it as a regressive tax or a voluntary tax, as you said earlier?
Well, it's a voluntary regressive tax.
A hybrid tier.
That's right. You sort of get in trouble with some economists if you really call playing lottery a tax, because they say, well, no, of course it's not. It's not a tax because it's a recreational activity. And taxes are, the key distinction there is taxes are obligatory and playing the lottery is not. But it's still, I mean, there's so much government money, revenues raised from it, that it's effectively a tax.
Now, here in Pennsylvania, a lot of the money, I guess most of the money, goes to pay for programs for the elderly, for older residents in the state. Looking at other states, how else is this money spent by the government?
So it's not uncommon for lottery revenues to be earmarked for specific programs. So other states have, for example, funded college scholarships with lottery money, and in Maryland, some of the professional sports stadium construction was funded out of lottery money. In Canada, a lot of the lottery revenues go into a fund for good causes, so which would fund all sorts of local charitable organizations directly through grants. So, and then in some other cases, the lottery proceeds, government proceeds, just go directly into general fund revenues.
Let's pretend that a lottery ticket costs a dollar. Then what percentage goes to the person who sold you the ticket? What goes for operating costs? What of that money goes into state coffers? And how much to the winners?
Yeah, so the immediate government rake-off is 45% usually, somewhere in that vicinity.
Right.
Operators of lottery outlets earn a commission, and they also sometimes, if they happen to sell a very large jackpot ticket, they would also get some bonus payment from the government for that. The operating costs are relatively low. Right, so I mean, it is footed by out of the government rake off usually. So it's, you know, having a lottery terminal is not that expensive, and you know they're in convenience stores, so it's not like it's very difficult. It involves a lot of labor to sell those tickets, but still, I mean, in general, 55% of the money that gets paid in does get paid out in some form of prize, and it's important to recognize that, you know, it's not just the jackpot. There's all these secondary prizes which add up to quite a bit if you match four numbers in the Powerball, you're going to get a payout, or these sorts of things. So 55% of the money spent on lotteries typically does get paid out as one form of prize or another.
And that's Brad Humphreys, the first of three guests in this hour of Radio Times. We are talking about lotteries and the fact that more and more states are relying on people gambling, either lotteries or certainly here in Pennsylvania. We have a proliferation of casinos. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Brad, I'm curious, have you ever played the lottery, you yourself?
Yeah, I do occasionally. When the last big Powerball jackpot was there, I bought a ticket because, you know, the expected value calculation suggests that any time on a 649 game, well, no, it's not a six, sorry, not a 649 game, but a game like
I don't even know what that is.
Right, a 649. It's the number of numbers you have to match and what the range of those numbers would be. So the common lottery in Canada is 649. There's six balls drawn from the range 1 to 49. So that only has about a 13 million, 1 in 13 million probability of winning. The Powerball is a much longer odds game because you have to match the Powerball and there's more numbers. I believe it's 1 to 56. So that's how you get to 1 in 175 million. But the calculation is if the jackpot is roughly $350 million or higher, then the expected value of a $1 ticket would be more than $1. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in a financial calculation, it would not be an immediately losing bet to buy a ticket. So, and I have occasionally because I like to dream about hitting the jackpot just like anybody else.
But do you? I mean, do you think this is my lucky day or this is my lucky number? And I, you know, I'm a lucky guy today. I'm going to win the lottery.
No, I do not. I understand.
That's dangerous thinking, I think.
Well, you know, lucky numbers, that's a really, Marty, interesting phenomenon that we observe in lotteries. People like to play their lucky numbers, you know, birthdays and numbers that would have important meaning to them. And that means that a lot of people play the same numbers, and then that really raises the likelihood that you'd have to split the jackpot.
Oh, really?
So, oh, yeah. There's this really famous case in the U.K. where they have a tremendously popular national lottery. And they had a big, you know, like 10 million pound jackpot, which was won by more than 1,000 people. And the reason was, it turned out that the winning combination that was drawn formed some pattern on the lottery card.
Oh, so it looked a certain kind of way on the lottery card?
It might have been down the diagonal or down one row or something like that. And thousands of people had done that. And then, you know, they had to share this huge jackpot, which, I mean, from an economic perspective, that's just irrational, right?
But the whole thing is irrational, isn't it?
Perhaps the most irrational economic activity that I can think of.
Indeed. I was reading about our governor, Tom Corbett, is at least thinking about expanding the lottery to things like Keno and online games. Are we just sort of at the very beginning of even more gambling and more governments trying to figure out how to get people to gamble in order to get some of their money?
Absolutely. I think from a public finance perspective, we are just at the beginning. And that's because, again, it's a voluntary tax. The government realizes it can raise revenues off of it quite easier. It's really hard, as we all know, to raise income taxes or sales taxes or property taxes. But it's not very hard to expand the opportunity to gamble legally and still raise government revenues off of it. So I think this whole, you know, the online gambling world, it's only going to increase in terms of what people are going to have access to.
And about a minute before we have to say goodbye here, but what role do you think the news media plays? And by that I mean in terms of ginning up the kind of excitement about Powerball, for instance.
Oh, tremendous. I think the media covers it. They're always, you know, the photo ops after the jackpot's won with a big check and the interviews with the winners and those sort of things. I think that the media really contributes to demand for lottery tickets. And that's because, you know, somebody does win. And because somebody wins and you get to see who that person is that wins, many people get the erroneous idea then that it must be relatively likely that they're going to win. And that's, you know, one of the roles the media plays, I believe.
And we're almost out of time here, but if you were to win, have you thought about how you would spend all that money?
No, I haven't. Well, I have some concerns about that, actually, because I can't imagine what I'd do with myself if I wasn't working. So I'd have to probably keep working or I'd go crazy. So it's a bit of a conundrum for me.
Well, and it's a perfect segue to our second two guests waiting in the wings. Brett Humphries, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. Wonderful chatting with you.
Nice to chat with you as well. Professor of Economics, Chair in the Economics of Gambling at the University of Alberta in Canada. And again, we do have two guests waiting in the wings. We are talking about the lottery. Have you ever played? If you have, give us a call. If you never have, give us a call as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. PAFA Continuing Education invites you to join their community of artists of all ages and levels with a lineup of drawing, painting, sculpture, and printmaking classes, weekend workshops, pre-college Saturday classes for high school students, and master classes with artists. Registration is now open and classes begin January 22nd. For details, pafa.edu/CE.
Yuck, they're greasy.
I know, Michael said. They're not as good as my mom's.
A fourth grader fries his own latkes and cooks up a small miracle. And an uncertain young life is mysteriously redirected. I'm Susan Stamberg. Join me and Murray Horowitz for the 2012 edition of Hanukkah Lights from NPR.
Monday night at 10 on WHYY.
Independence Blue Cross is proud to support WHYY. Independence Blue Cross is dedicated to transforming healthcare to make a better coordinated system that is built around you. They're committed to leading the way to focus on preventing illness rather than reacting to it, pioneering new ways to pay healthcare professionals based on the quality of care, and using technology to update your medical information electronically so everyone can be informed. Further details online at ibx.com. Independence Blue Cross, changing the game.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Millions of Americans bought Powerball tickets hoping to win the record $588 million jackpot. One of the winning tickets belongs to a Missouri family who will receive roughly $136 million after taxes. We are looking at and talking about the lottery, what it means for the winners and for the losers. And we have two guests who have joined us by telephone. Don McKay is a financial consultant, columnist, and Huffington Post contributor. His latest book is called Life Lessons from the Lottery. And Don McKay, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Oh, thank you, Marty. Good to be here.
Nice to have you here. Also with us is Steve Danish. He's a professor of psychology, director of the Life Skills Center at Virginia Commonwealth University. He has worked extensively with lottery winners. And Steve Danish, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
We're happy to have you both here. And we do want to hear from you. We're curious about where you stand on the lottery. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Don McKay, if you could talk to this Missouri family, this Missouri couple who won $136 million after taxes, what would be your first piece of advice to them?
Marty, I have 5 points in my book, and so far they've violated almost all of them.
Really?
The first one is to keep it quiet and to not let people know that you want it. Now, that's different state by state. For example, in states like Delaware and Ohio and Indiana, you can stay completely anonymous. Arizona, there's a winner out there who has not come forward. They can stay anonymous. Other places will require you to, they can reveal your name, like Kentucky where I live, that's the case, but you don't have to have the news conference. Right. Florida, you have to have the news conference. Missouri, they could have come forward without doing a news conference and but they did. That was mistake number one, because I think that opened you up to so many people who, if you tell the world that you're getting money that you never knew you were going to have, it opened up the world to a lot of different people trying to get a part of that money.
If you don't mind, Don, hang on to those other four parts, and I do want to get to them, but I also want to just give Steve Danish a chance to essentially respond to the same question. Steve Danish, if you could consult with this Missouri family, you're a psychologist, what would be your first piece of advice?
First piece of advice would be to go to someone like a financial planner to help you plan what you're going to do with your money.
Yeah. Actually, if I could jump in there on that, Steve, the thing that I always recommend, first of all, would be to go to, one is the same thing, is the second point that I have, is to find a financial advisor, not just any financial advisor, but one who's worked with more money than what you have. Mm-hmm. So if you get $100 million, find somebody that's worked with $150 million. But my first stop is usually going to be a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the first things that come up are going to be wills. Do you want to set up a trust? How do you want to divide the money? If you're going through divorce, and I've seen this several times now, where someone, they're separated but not divorced. Well, that's community property in most states, and so that means you own half the lottery winning. So how does all that play out? So then build that team with the financial advisors and that sort of thing.
Well, and going back to Steve Danish, something that I know that you have written about and talked about and probably talked to people about, which is the stress of winning this kind of money. I mean, one would think, oh my goodness, you know, here I have $136 million, lucky me. But when you hear about some of these winners, it sounds like unlucky me for a lot of them.
Yes.
Why would winning this kind of money be either stressful or even maybe depressing?
Well, if you don't have plans and dreams and goals for your life before you win, then winning is just a disaster because you don't know what to do with it, and people will come at you every which way to try to tell you that they are your third cousin, second time removed, or whatever. They're going to want to make you feel guilty. You're going to feel invaded and perhaps threatened and confused. And all those things really affect your health and welfare, because you start to have stomach problems, you start to live with stress that you never had before, and it's a lot easier to dream about winning than it is to win.
Well, picking up on that, and Don McKay going back, or McNay, I should say, going. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Going back to you, I mean, it's hard enough to make financial decisions under normal circumstances, and I know that's one of the things that, couples often fight about. But then adding this sudden wealth, I would think, makes it even harder to think straight about money.
Oh, no question. Steve hit on just a very good point. First of all, these people coming out of nowhere who are wanting part of your money. And not just people that you know, people that you don't know, charities. We're in the holiday season now. If you happen to win this week, they would all. And that added stress just comes into people's lives. And you add all that into the fact that, you know, an overwhelming number of people run through all their lottery winnings in 5 years or less.
Really?
And it sounds insane, but I think it's because of the stress, because of the pressures, and the fact that they don't have good systems or things of that nature set up. The same thing happens with professional athletes. Same thing happens with people who inherit money who aren't expecting it. And as Steve said, don't have dreams or aspirations or goals. People who, like, run businesses or entrepreneurs, they don't have a goal for their money. They have things they want to do. They're less likely to run through it all.
Well, and Steve, I wonder whether, you know, having this sudden wealth, it might change your life, but it doesn't necessarily, I guess, change who you are.
Well, it sometimes does. I'm amazed at how many people who win these lotteries go out and buy three or four different cars.
Really?
Who invest in, convinced to invest in concerts by famous people and put up money for these sorts of things, because it's kind of like Monopoly money for them, because they didn't do anything to get it.
They
got lucky and put down $2.
Yeah, if I can jump in on
that. Go ahead, Don.
I've been in the business of working with people who get large money for 30 years, and I've seen all of that. I've seen the buying cars for all the neighbors, taking all the taking 100 people on a cruise, just silly things. Actually, the concert thing is something I've had a couple people wander in lately, where country music stars wanted them to sponsor, you know, their road tour or their T-shirts, or that was a new one on me, to be honest. And so I had not seen that till recently, and I can see that idea of wanting to hang out with celebrities and why that appeals to a lot of people. And
For a while.
You run through it all, and then they're not going to be the celebrities aren't going to be your friends anymore. When you run through all the money, you're going to lose your entourage pretty quickly.
Well,
that becomes a real problem, because people don't know whether people are interested in being their friends because they're nice people, or because they have a lot of money.
Right.
And it makes it very difficult for a person to decide if they're really thinking about, well, who do I really want to be friendly with? Who is my friend? Who are my real friends? Whether they may not be able to make that decision very ably or at all.
I see people where they give one of two things happen. One is everybody's their friend, and they're giving money out to people they really shouldn't be, who are just hanging around to become an entourage. And this is something you also see with entertainers and athletes. And then you get the other extreme, which is people get very isolated, and then they're suspicious, and they're afraid to talk to anyone.
Right.
And that's one of those things. My argument has always been, if someone was your friend before they knew you, before you had money, they should be your friend afterwards. And if they suddenly become interested in your money, then they're no longer your friend.
And that's Don McNay. He's a financial consultant, columnist, also a Huffington Post contributor. His latest book is Life Lessons from the Lottery. Also with us, Steve Danish. He's a professor of psychology, director of the Life Skills Center at Virginia Commonwealth University, and he has worked with lottery winners. We are talking about, I guess, the real winners and losers when it comes to things like the lottery or sudden wealth. And we're taking calls calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We're curious if you have ever played the lottery and why, and if you've never played the lottery, why not? Don, if I can go back to you, because you said this Missouri couple broke all of your rules, including one of your rules, take the money in annual payments instead of the lump sum. I guess that's for financial reasons?
Yeah, there's several, two reasons. One is psychological. It's just to the idea that instead of getting $100 million at one time, if you get $5 million at once, it's a chance to ease into your new lifestyle. And if you run through the $5 million at once, you get 19 more tries to get it right.
Wow.
And so... And so
very practical.
Yeah, I mean, and I've seen that. And 98% of people who win a Powerball lottery take the lump sum. So I'm not preaching. I'm preaching to a very small subset. But ideally, it helps that way. And normally, it would help for tax reasons. If you say won $1 million and took it over 20 years, it would probably help you get into a lower tax bracket.
Sure.
Give you an opportunity. $100 million, you're always going to be in a high tax bracket.
We've been talking about some of the downsides of winning the lottery, and perhaps it's just sour grapes because none of us won the Powerball lottery. But to you, Steve, I'm curious about those who handle this well. What should we know about them? I mean, those, let's say they come into some sudden money and manage it well and actually maybe are happier because of it.
Well, go ahead,
Steve, and Don will get you in on this as well. Steve,
I do think the people who manage it well have some goals for their lives and plans, and this just allows them to play it out better because they have more opportunity to use the money to go for those goals and plans and to try to reach those goals that they have. I think that to me is extremely important. I mean, some people talk about, well, you know, they're going to start a nonprofit, and therefore they won't be able to put their hands on all the money, but they will be able to do sort of things they want to do with that money if they had these plans before and goals before that they developed for themselves.
In fact, Don, one of your suggestions or your pieces of advice, if you do come into sudden money, which is to give back to society.
Oh, no question. If you look at the people who have money who've been the happiest, take the 20th century, Carnegie, Rockefeller, people of that nature, gave away most of their money while they're still alive. And so does Bill Gates Warren Buffett right now. They are using the wealth they accumulated to make an impact when they can still see that impact. And those are the people, as Steve said, having a goal and having things they want to do, and rather than impressing their neighbors with buying 14 cars, the Will Rogers thing, trying to impress people you don't know with money you don't have. They have money, but they won't if they keep it up at that rate. If they do something like start a nonprofit or have a cause that they believe in very strongly, you can really change your world with a lottery winning type of contribution.
Don, you had mentioned the fact that most people go through their sudden winnings, whether it's lottery or sudden wealth, in about 5 years. I mean, the possibility, I'm thinking of this Missouri family, is it possible to go through $136 million in 5 years?
Oh, it's possible, and it's happened many times.
Really?
And, for larger sums than that, and so and in shorter periods of time, and people making bad decisions, and people just running. One of the more famous cases is Jack Whitaker of Hurricane West Virginia, who won $275 million in 2002. At the time, he's the highest Powerball winner in the country, and I don't think Jack has run through all of his money, but he's a big chunk of it. And horrible story. He was robbed of $600,000 in cash while he was in a strip club. His granddaughter died of a drug overdose.
Oh, wow.
And another friend of hers died in their house of a drug overdose. His wife has divorced him. And he didn't seem like the prototype of someone who had run through a lottery. He was 65 years old. He had already been a millionaire, been married, and he's a building contractor. Had been married for 40 years. He seemed like somebody pretty stable.
Yeah.
So for him to almost be the poster child of everything gone wrong and I write about them in both of the books that I've written about lottery winners, is a little bit, it kind of threw me, but the money just drove him, made him really change his personality to a certain degree.
Well, let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. Looks like we have a Tracy from Coatesville joining us on Radio Times. And
hi.
Hi, Tracy. Go ahead.
How
you're on the
you?
Air. I'm good. How are
thank
you?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm fine. Thank you. I have a really big concern. Now, I live in a low-income area, and I'm kind of a mentor. The thing that has bothered me about the lottery, and the only reason I really don't play, is because I've actually watched people make life decisions as far as buying something to eat that night or buying a lottery ticket, mm-hmm. buying diapers versus buying a lottery ticket. So I really kind of wanted to get some input so that I could offer some help to the people in my neighborhood as to the, I guess, just the common sense approach to buying a lottery ticket and putting your faith in something that might not work.
You know, Tracy, the first
Tracy, guest, thanks. Yeah, go ahead, Dom.
Yeah, Tracy, the first guest that came on talked about, you know, the odds were 175 million to one of winning the lottery. So if you buy a $2 ticket, you can probably afford that. But I see people who can't afford it spending hundreds of dollars. You know, if it's 175 to 100, it's not going to help you all that much. Mm-hmm. 175 million to 100, the odds are still astronomical. So, I mean, I don't mind somebody buying a $1 or $2 ticket, but when they are doing it to where they're taking away from buying diapers from their children, there's a problem there.
Indeed it is. Tracy, let me see what Steve Danish has to say. Steve, go ahead.
Tracy, you know, I think you're really talking about people who are addicted to dreams. You know, in other words, things like diapers are so mundane compared mm-hmm. to dreams. That they won't think about the real needs they have, but really focus on what it would be like to achieve those dreams. It's almost like an addiction. And when you have that kind of approach, it's going to be very hard to rationally convince people that they should buy those diapers instead. It's a very hard task. It's not out of the question, and you really need to pursue it, but you also need to understand that there are people out there that really are just living for mm-hmm. a dream, and winning the lottery is the best dream they can have.
Tracy, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. We touched on it with our first guest, Brad Humphreys. And Steve, we're almost up on a break here, but I was also reading that unemployed people are more likely to play the lottery, and again, playing off this dream idea of yours.
Yes, it's true. Yeah, because what else do you have going for you?
Right.
If you don't have things going for you, then dreams are really a big way of trying to live your life.
Well, let's take that short break, and we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about the real winners and losers when it comes to playing the lottery or being the recipient of sudden wealth. Talking with Steve Danish. He's a professor of psychology, a director of the Life Skills Center at Virginia Commonwealth University. Also with Don McNay, financial consultant, columnist, author of a book called Life Lessons from the Lottery. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Delaware Theater Company supports WHYY and presents a world premiere adaptation of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, now through December 30th. The timeless classic gets a merry retelling by Tony Award-winning playwright Patrick Barlow, the creator of Broadway's The 39 Steps. Five actors portray more than 20 characters in this highly physical reimagining of the transformation of Ebenezer Scrooge. For tickets, 302-594-1100 or DelawareTheater.org.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. In the age of Twitter and iPhone cameras, when everyone can snap a picture, which ones to publish? The ethics of news photography. Also, epic, LOL, literally, words you'd like to leave behind at year's end. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Drexel University's Six Sigma program supports WHYY and offers Six Sigma certification in the four belts, black, green, yellow, or white. Classes begin at various times throughout the winter and spring. Details at goodwin.drexel.edu/AE. Lean Six Sigma is a certification committed to maximizing on-the-job productivity through management practices that will help increase customer satisfaction. Details at 215-895-2154 or online at goodwin.drexel.edu/AE.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. We've been talking about the proliferation of state-run lotteries in this hour of Radio Times, who plays and why, who the real winners and losers are, how winners get in trouble, and why sudden wealth is so stressful. Just one or two open lines at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Again, talking with Don McNay and with Steve Danish. Don, you had a story in that you have told in some of your books about a woman named Amanda Clayton, and it seems to me this is a real cautionary tale.
Oh, it is. She's one who in Michigan who went through $1 million, but also died of a drug overdose, essentially, age 24 years old, and it's just the whole idea of having too much access to too much money at a point where they really can't handle it. And also, she was kind of almost a mark for people around her, similar to someone named Abraham Shakespeare, who was murdered in Florida, allegedly by his financial advisor. She's been arrested, and the trial's gone back and forth for a couple years now. He was someone who was very uneducated, unable to handle the money, and was somebody to be taken advantage of. And getting back to something that Steve said earlier about the idea of people not having dreams and not having real goals, I think that's just a real problem for anybody handling any kind of money.
Sure.
And I think particularly lottery winners. One of the analogies that I use is Michael Pollan's book, In Defense of Food, where he talks about people who can chew on cocoa leaves all the day in South America and not become addicts, but when you crystallize it and make it cocaine, they do.
Mm.
Same thing, that rush of money is just like the rush of cocaine.
That's a powerful metaphor. Steve, let me ask you, both of you have talked about the friend, I'm using quotations here, friends who come out of the woodwork after you've won the lottery. How do you say no? Is that hard for people to learn, Steve?
Oh, I think it is, because, first of all, you know, it isn't like you earned it. You didn't do anything to earn this money. So it's harder to kind of say no to people, because it's kind of a fantasy. I think, you can say no, but you really need to conversations with people like your financial planner and people who will tell you and help you understand what you're doing with your money. That's one. And then you need to be able to say, whatever you get it, here's what I want to do with it, and do you fit in? That's something you need to be asking yourself. Here's what I want to do with my money. Does this person who wants some help fit into that? And you really need to be tough, and that's hard to do.
Well, let me jump in there, Marty.
Go ahead,
as far
Don.
As that's because it's something I deal with, you know, my role as a financial advisor is primarily to tell people no. And
tell people no, right?
A couple things. One is to set up systems like trust and annuities, or things that make it hard for the people to, and taking the money over every year, 20 years instead of at one time, make it hard for the people to have access to their own money, because telling your family members no, and telling a new romantic interest no. New romantic interests show very frequently with people who suddenly get large sums of money. As I told somebody I met one time, I said, she was in her late 20s, I said, you just became the best-looking woman in your city.
A real aphrodisiac, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah. You'd be amazed how many guys just suddenly thought, you know, she was beautiful and just wonderful. And and here's somebody that didn't have that kind of activity before the money came. And hers was public. It was made it much more complicated. Mm-hmm. But try to get a buffer between you if you win the lottery, try to get a buffer between you and the people that you're around you, and that includes your closest family members, and try to set some limits. If you watch some of these reality shows that are on about lottery winners, and they'll buy 14 people Jeeps, and then the next year the 14 people want Rolls Royces or something like that. They're not sad. You can't buy off your friends, essentially, or buy their love.
Well, Steve, as you said, part of this sudden wealth is that you didn't earn it, especially if you won the lottery. So is there some kind of guilt associated with that?
Oh,
and that's why it's so difficult to say no, and then we'll get to our callers.
Yes,
go ahead,
Steve. There is guilt because part of the guilt is that you can't make everyone else's dream come true.
That's a good point.
Yeah, you got your dream to come true, but you can't make everyone else's.
That's a
right.
Point.
And why can't you? You know, you got all this money.
Right.
Yeah. Why can't you do it?
Right.
And it's interesting because here's $136 million. I think that's the number Don mentioned for the person who from Missouri. You know, when you think that the lottery was $585 million and you only got $136, you know, that you can run through that pretty quickly. I mean, not tomorrow, but, I mean, I think in some ways part of that is a surprise that you hear all the amount of money that you've won, but then when it comes to the check that you have, it's a lot less. Now, $136 isn't pennies.
No, it isn't.
But
it's a lot of pennies.
It certainly isn't $585.
Right, which is $500 million.
Yeah,
let me get some more callers in, and we have Andy from Kutztown joining us on Radio Times. Andy, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I have a couple different things, and one thing kind of leads into the other. My husband and I often debate over buying a lottery ticket, but it's more about the conversation that we have beforehand where he says, well, if you want this, hopefully we'll win the lottery. And
right.
He says it playfully, but at the same time, he's kind of meaning it because we come from different backgrounds where in his home, his parents started with very little and still have very little because they didn't make the right choices and worked very hard, but we're always kind of stuck. So it felt like it had to be a desperate thing for something to change, whereas I come from a place where there was nothing, but there was a building process. And I believe that, you know, we have that possibility, that potential to start with little and to make the right choices and to try to build with hard work. So I believe, you know, I say we can do these things. It's almost like a fallback thing for him. But also, interestingly, I'm 32 now, but when I was 22, so 10 years ago, I was in a terrible bicycle accident in downtown Philly and settled on a large sum of money and ultimately didn't really, I had a financial advisor, which I still have, but there's very little left, and part of it's because I used it. I had to live off of it as a person who was trying to find employment as an artist.
Right.
There's always that piece. But just having that large sum of money and really, I like what you were saying, Rob, about having the financial advisor say no, because I think my relationship to my financial advisor is almost like she was like a maternal figure, and she was more giving, and I could kind of negotiate and intellectualize my way of saying, well, I need this here, and I can, let's liquidate this, and
Let me take your points, and they're interesting ones, and give Don McNay a chance to respond to that. Thanks for calling into Radio Times, Don.
Yeah, as far as you know, and I've seen this actually with the primary people that I do work with are injured people, and work with something called structured settlements, and one of the. And the idea is the same concept of taking the money out over time as opposed to taking it all in one sum. And the other thing is the financial advisor is in an interesting position where they don't want to lose you as a client, so it's a lot easier to say yes. And also, you can get worn down with people who are constantly asking for money we try to set boundaries for people, and oftentimes, as Steve said earlier, they're paying for someone else's dreams, and those boundaries are getting violated. And so trying to keep them reined in is difficult. And also it goes back to what you're saying earlier about the different households that you grew up in. That's your parents are your best role models as far as how you're going to spend your money. And if you're in a situation where you've seen your parents save and earn and get somewhere as opposed to running through all the money and then hoping something good happens, which unfortunately too many people do. And I think a lot of those people wind up buying lottery tickets hoping that's the thing that's good.
Thanks, Andy, for calling into Radio Times. And just picking up on that, Steve, her story was interesting. And as Don said, coming from two different families, how something is, in a sense, simple as buying a lottery ticket can be a complicated transaction.
Sure, because of the histories of both of those families. And as you mentioned earlier, money is really one of the biggest things that families fight over. In fact, I think it is the biggest thing that families fight over.
It is.
And in the situation with your caller, that is, you know, because they have different family backgrounds,
right,
and they've grown up differently and they see money differently, this is going to be a bone of contention for them forever. And if they're lucky slash unlucky enough to win a lottery, if they do buy a ticket and win, that is going to play out for the time they have the money.
Well, and hopefully they can talk about it and we can have a happy ending to that particular story. Let me see what looks like Liz from Exton has to say. And Liz, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Real quick, four siblings, including myself, inherited quite a big sum of money very unexpectedly. Two of my siblings had pretty bad money management habits before they inherited the money and blew through it within a year. The
wow.
other two siblings, myself included, we have always been very frugal and savers. And I'm just find it fascinating. It seems like people that have poor money management skills before they get their windfall seem to carry those behaviors throughout the windfall. What do the guys think about that?
Why would they be different?
I
would expect that money doesn't really change you. I think it just it exaggerates the kind of person you are.
Yeah, that's exactly what I say in my book. If you were a spender when you had a little bit of money, when you have a lot of money, then you really have a lot more opportunity to get way off the reservation, and also fewer people who will ever tell you no. And those around you want to be part of all that money that you're spending. If you study like professional athletes who take 30 people out to a strip club, you never see anyone else ever picking up the tab. And so the same thing can happen if you had poor habits to begin with. And you'll see this, I guess, Steve, you can comment on it. You see this dynamic all the time where you'll have one saver in a family and one spender in a family. And my late sister and I were that way. We were very different as far as how we handled our money. And
well, Liz, I have a question for you. Do the siblings that went through all that money in a year, do they want you to help them out?
I did have one sibling come to me after he went through the money asking to borrow some money because he hadn't been working for a long time. And my other sibling was actually, after she realized she blew through it, she turned to me one day and said, I just can't believe I blew through all that money. I wish I hadn't. Uh-huh. But she still hasn't changed her ways.
and you've held tight, Liz?
I've held tight. I still have the money.
Okay. Great.
Thank you for calling in. Let me see what Tammy from Newark, Delaware has to say. And Tammy, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I actually have a good friend of the family who won the Mega Millions in California many years ago.
Wow.
And she was not well off before she won and was very frugal because of that. But I'm curious about the relationship to the financial advisor because I've seen that, for example, her financial advisor doesn't even let her spend the interest that she makes off of her money every year. And I feel as though he makes money off of how much she has, and
right.
So he's actually trying to limit her more even than he could.
Oh, that's interesting. I know, Don McNay, you probably want to take that. Go ahead.
There is a balance, yeah. And there needs to be a balance. You need to have enough money to where you enjoy it and can do something. If you have won the lottery, you want to be able to do things that enhance and improve your life. And the key is not, you know, my thought would be to spend the interest and keep the principal or
right.
something along those lines
right.
as opposed to not letting them have anything. And, of course, there can be these conflicts. And one is to find an advisor who works hourly or works on. There are different types of advisors. There's different ways to make it work. And so not all of them charge a fee for assets under management.
Tammy, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Steve Danish, is there a connection between money and happiness?
Not a real strong one, but there is a connection, and I guess it's almost curvilinear. In other words, it probably helps to have money, and for a certain level of happiness. But I think after a while, it serves to be a negative. It serves to have a negative relationship.
How about for you, Don?
Between money and happiness.
How do you see it, Don?
Yeah, I think, you know, I see poor people that are happy. I see rich people that are miserable. There was a study like in the 1970s of lottery winners and injury victims as far as if the more money made them more happy. And actually, it's pretty much what Steve said. Actually, past a certain point, it went downward. And so too much money was more problems and more hassle than they needed to deal with. So there's that balance they have to walk.
And one of the other things is it's true for athletes, and I have done a lot of work as a sports psychologist with athletes, but it's also true for anybody who comes into money. It's kind of like you've done something, even if you haven't done anything real, you bought the ticket. And then all of a sudden when the thrill is off, or when you're retired as an athlete, then you don't know who you are anymore. You don't have goals in your life.
Well, I have to end our discussion there only because they're playing my song. And Steve Danish and Don McNay, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks very much. You too. And we appreciate those phone calls to Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to learn more about the program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us. And coming up next, it's Here and Now. We do rebroadcast Radio Time.